Hey, Ken, this is the Orphans No More podcast, episode 277, to air Monday, June 14th. And I'm recording Wayne and I in the office, so both of our audio is going to be through the Audacity. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. And the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. That is from Matthew chapter 25, verses 35, 36, and 40. Welcome to Orphans No More, a podcast to encourage, educate, and equip you to care for children in crisis through adoption, foster care, and kinship care. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining me for episode 277. I have an amazing adoptive dad guest on today, but first, my book, Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father, is now available as an ebook on Amazon, and the physical copy will be available wherever good books are sold starting June 15th. So by the time you're listening to this, it really should be out there wherever you purchase your books. If you purchase the copy, the physical copy or the ebook copy on Amazon, please do me a huge favor, and after reading it, leave a review on Amazon. Reviews are important because they indicate the book is popular, and then Amazon will rank it higher in the search engine. So please leave a review. You can also purchase a signed copy on my website, sandraflack.com, where you can also learn about me, this podcast, read my blog, which is really, I write it to foster and adoptive parents, especially moms. You can contact me for speaking opportunities, all of it on my website, sandraflack.com. My website is also connected to our ministry website, justicefororphansny.org, and there you can check out all that we're doing with Care Portal and this podcast and everything that's going on there. And both websites are connected, so you'll be able to find both either place you go. So I am excited to have as a guest this week my favorite adoptive dad, my husband of 34 years. Now, I've hosted this show since it was a radio program 7 years ago, and I've never interviewed him before. So this is going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. So please welcome my husband, Wayne Flack. Hey, honey.
Hi, my beautiful wife.
Thank you. Now I'm blushing, so it's a good thing this is not video. I'm excited to have you on so we can have this conversation, and I'm sure that our listeners, as we get going, are gonna figure out really right away which one of us has the spiritual gift of gab, and which one is the strong, silent type. But I'm gonna get you to answer some questions. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Awesome. So foster and adoptive parents are often guests on my show, and I always love to ask them what led them to adopt or become foster parents. So I'm curious what your answer would be. Tell us why you became an adoptive dad.
I believe that God calls each and every one of us to do something in His name. I felt that as we were attending Gospel Church, Community Church in Coxsackie with Pastor Stan and Mary was a big influence, but and also you got the calling from God and was needling me throughout the years, seemed like years. But plus I have a rich Christian heritage. My grandfather was a missionary for 32 years in Africa. My mom and dad were born again Christians. I was raised in the church from just a baby, dedicated right on up through. So my background made it easy for me to, you know, become an adoptive dad throughout our journey.
Do you really think I was needling you for years? I tell the story in our book.
And I know.
And I think it was funny because you've been reading the book, even though
right.
you read it before it was printed. But you've been reading it, and I've heard you like kind of giggle a few times. And I asked you, what are you laughing at? And you said, you know, gee, Wayne, get it together. You know. So
it yeah, because you kept waiting and waiting and waiting. And
yeah.
Which seemed like years, but.
Yeah, I think it almost was, but. So. All right, so we had three biological kids, as you probably remember, and when Missy, our first adopted daughter, came to live with us back in 1999, when she was 8 years old, we got custody of her initially. We didn't have adoption or anything like that on our radar. We just said yes to this little girl. What do you remember about that time?
I just think it was... a couple thoughts was that it was God's timing for Melissa to come to kind of prepare us and get us ready for, you know, more children to come in our lives and in our home. And I think that we learned some lessons along the way because it's something new that happened to us with our biological children involved. And I think it was a step, the first step in that direction that God was calling us for.
Yeah, we didn't know it at the time that
No.
that was just the beginning of where we were going to head to. I know, because I describe that whole experience in my book and what we had to go through with her grandmother. You remember
yes,
that. And I don't know if I really mentioned this in the book, but although her grandmother despised me, because I think I was the target of her anger, she loved you. She always seemed to want to talk to you, and she loved you, but I was sort of, you know, the person that she targeted her anger
yeah.
at. So I was glad that you could kind of be a buffer also during that time. So, of course, I tell our whole story in my book, but let's dive into it a little bit here. It took a few years for us to be on the same page regarding adopting again. You were totally on the same page. We were together on that with bringing Melissa into our family. But as the years went on and the Lord began to stir in my heart to adopt internationally, we weren't in the same place at the same time on the same page, so to speak. So, share your thoughts about how you did come to know that we were supposed to adopt from Ukraine.
I think a lot of influence was Gospel Community Church with Pastor Stan and Mary were a very big influence. And their daughter Laura and Joey and what they were doing was also a big influence. And when you attend church every Sunday and you have, it's talked about frequently, you know, Ukraine and, you know, what Stan and Mary were doing with their adoptive children.
Yeah, for our listeners who don't know, our pastor at the time, Pastor Stan and Mary Slager, they had adopted four siblings from Ukraine back in, I think it was 1999. And then by the time we traveled to get our kids, they had adopted again from Ukraine. So they had five children adopted from Ukraine. And their daughter, Laura, was a missionary with YWAM in Kiev, Ukraine. And I had gone on a missions trip there. So it was just Pastor Stan. It just seemed to be the culture of our church. Pastor
yes,
Stan and Mary
yes.
would speak of it often from the pulpit, and
yes.
it was modeled for us. So that's what you're talking about.
Yes, because that's the word I was looking for. Pastor Stan and Mary modeled, you know, I call it boots on the ground. not only did they talk about it, but they actually did it. And they were a very big influence.
Yeah.
And the church as a whole was very supportive in the adoption process and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. Because there are churches that are not supportive of families, really. But we just were fully embraced, and our kids were embraced. And it was sort of like just, it was like the church adopted
it's
as well.
It's like you had everybody yeah. behind you.
We did.
You know, supportive and rooting for you and
yeah,
and cheering you on.
Yeah, definitely. So traveling to Ukraine was a stretch for you. You had been to Cambodia, I think, the year before. That was your first time ever out of the country on a mission trip. And then we go to Ukraine, being in a foreign country, being away from work, the company that you run for so long, being away from our biological kids for a time. And then, of course, adopting three kids was no small thing. How did that whole experience grow your faith?
Looking back and remembering it, all I can say is when you are in a foreign land, you can't talk to anybody hardly and understand people unless you have a translator. And you're sitting in a car for hours and hours and hours and hours. And it's like you can't do anything but pray and ask God to intervene in every detail that you're doing throughout the day. I just felt that our faith just grew day after day based on the circumstances that are before you.
Yeah, because that's all we could do was really rely on each other.
That's all you could do.
And on the Lord, and send those prayer requests home.
Yes.
We would go to that internet
cafe. We had a lot of support and prayer yeah. from gospel community and friends and family and so forth.
Yeah, for sure. After we brought the three kids home, so when I say three kids, I'm talking Andre, Anna, and Jordan. And when we brought them home in the winter of 2007, Andre was almost 10 years old, Anna was 7 years old, and Jordan was 3 years old. What do you remember about that adjustment, those early days when we first brought them home?
When you came home on the final day there,
yeah,
I just thought that everything clicked. There was hardly any interference with the three of them. It's like they all connected and meshed in with our family. It was almost too good to believe at first.
Yeah,
I thought. And it's just like everything clicked and connected.
Yeah.
In every way, almost. Other than the language barrier at first, everything just kind of clicked, and it was a great. I thought it was a great experience to begin with. As we got off, started off running there.
Yeah, yeah. I always say the same thing. It was like they just clicked and. And there was virtually not even a speed bump. Do you remember any kind of story from that time? Any kind, even if it's a funny thing? I know I didn't prep you for that, but any kind of.
No, I just think back and it's all good. I mean, everything just clicked, and other than some of our. Not teaching moments, but discipline moments, yeah. I felt weren't the right.
Right. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah,
yet.
We didn't know what we were doing because these kids come from hard places and And that's what I remember a little bit.
Yeah.
We could have used different techniques, and
we didn't know them yet. But our time was coming soon. I know one couple funny stories that I remember. I remember one time the kids were all sort of bouncing around the living room, and I think Anna was jumping on the couch, and you went in to kind of scold her and tell all the kids to not do that, and she mimicked you, which I was in the kitchen sort of chuckling, but it was funny, but not funny. But she really didn't understand the role of a dad. You know, she didn't understand respecting a dad in the orphanage. They're primarily taken care of by women. So it was like the kids had a lot to learn as well. We had a lot to learn. They had a lot to learn.
Absolutely.
But it was.
It was all good.
Yeah, it was really all good. So our biggest adjustment was bringing Slava home in 2010. Trauma and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder had a significant impact on him. What do you remember about those early days with Slava?
Wow. That was, what comes to mind is two things. When we first went to the orphanage to meet him and start working with him and playing with him and stuff, I just remember him throwing himself down that slide with no fear or nothing. And then when we got him home, I just remember one thought I had was, here I am, a construction worker. I fix things all the time. I fix pipes. I weld pipes. I run equipment. You're always fixing stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here with Slava in terms of...
You can't fix this.
You can't fix this. Yeah. This is beyond me. We need help.
Yeah.
And I just keep... that was the big thought that I had back when we got started.
Yeah. We knew we were in trouble the second they brought him into us at the orphanage. And we weren't sure how we were going to survive an airplane ride home with him.
Which actually went okay.
And that was pretty miraculous. And I tell about those early days in the book, but... you know, we definitely didn't know what we were doing. But as we began to learn about being trauma and FASD informed, we read the Connected Child book. I remember I read the Connected Child book the first summer he was home. We brought him home in November of 2010. And that summer I read the Connected Child book by Dr. Karen Purvis. And then I bought some DVDs that were made that based on that.
And we both listened to.
And we watched them together. Yeah. And I just remember you turning to me and saying, why didn't we know this before?
Right.
Because we realized we needed this information. So then we actually attended an Empowered to Connect back when Dr. Purvis was alive and they were doing them in person. We went to Nashville. We flew from New York to Nashville for that training. We were that desperate. And then eventually we became parent trainers so that we could help other parents. How did getting the trauma training improve things? What are your thoughts on that?
I just remember going through the videos with you and watching them together, and everyone, it seemed like you picked up something that you could learn from as far as techniques with connection to the child, giving them choices, giving them time in, and doing away with the old-fashioned techniques, which don't work.
Right.
These techniques just seem to work like Dr. Karen Purvis said they would.
Yeah.
And, you know, little by little, we kept using them. With me, it took me a lot longer to do away with the old and do the new. I will admit that. But after a while, when we kept doing them, then it got easier and easier.
Yeah.
But it took a while to to get the old habits behind you.
Yeah, yeah. And
it
just
don't happen overnight.
No, it doesn't. And I think we all have a tendency to revert kind of back to some of those things that we just, the way we parented our biological kids, but we learn kids
and,
with trauma.
And also the way our parents, some of it is the way our parents taught us too.
Yeah.
And so it's ingrained over years.
Yeah, and then learning completely new set of parenting tools was something we both had to do. And like you said, it's just trying over and over again
and still doing it today
because one of the things, honey, I love about you is that you are teachable. So as I get all of this training now on fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and we're working with the kids at home, I'm explaining to you about how to teach someone to mow the lawn who has a brain-based disability.
Right.
And then you just go out there and do it the way that I suggested and implemented it, and it's been working.
Yes, it has. Yep.
You know, because one of the things, I don't want to get ahead of myself in case we were going to talk about it later on, but we wanted Slava to help mow the lawn. He's 15. He has an FASD. But he refused. He was at to have a 15-year-old boy who knows how to drive a lawnmower, a riding lawnmower, and you're going to pay him to do that, to say, I'm not going to mow the lawn. Sounds like, he's being difficult. It sounds like he's being lazy. It sounds like he's being disobedient or rebellious or whatever. But
that's what you want to think right away.
Yes, because that's what it looks like.
Yep.
But when you know that what's going on with the brain, and then because I had just recently learned some of this, though he could drive a lawnmower, the brain has to do a whole lot more than just focus on driving the lawnmower in order to mow a lawn. There's executive function things that have to come into play, decision making, determining where you're going to start, how much you're going to do, where you're going to mow, where you're going to go down this way, then you're going to come back, and where you're going to go next. So there's decision making, there's planning, there's all of these things that your brain has to do. Your brain also has to filter out the noise of the lawnmower and actually figure out driving the lawnmower, right? So there's a lot of things.
Right.
And kids with FASD have a hard time, especially our son. He has a hard time with executive functioning things and planning and all of those things. So though he could drive a lawnmower, he was needing to do a whole lot more than that. So he was overwhelmed with not being able to pull all of that together. So that's why he was, I'm not going to do it. But my suggestion to you was take him out and have him do a small section. And then after that small section, have him do another small section. And then the next small section. And then every time you go out to mow, follow that same pattern.
Right.
And now
He's been doing good.
And you've been getting him to weed whack, which was like an extra thing. So, and I've noticed that now that he's got a plan and there's structure to this whole lawn mowing thing, now he's much more agreeable and kind of excited and starting to take some pride into his work because he likes that feeling of being successful at doing this.
Right.
But it wasn't, it was a long, we had to learn how to teach that.
Right.
You know, where our biological sons back in the day could just go out and mow a lawn. This was a completely different strategy on how to get a kid to mow the lawn.
Right.
So Slava's been home 11 years. The other kids have been home 14. Life is completely different than what it would have been had we not adopted. Our youngest biological daughter's child, Sierra, is, I think she's 24. Once they turn 21, I tend to sort of lose track because there's too many. There's eight of them. I can't keep track. But she's been graduated college and out of the house for quite a while. So we could be empty nesters, right? But we're not. And we might not exactly ever be, because especially our youngest will always need some kind of support. So life is different than maybe it would have been. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there are some days when I think to myself, we could be on an island somewhere, on vacation or something, just me and you.
Yeah.
But I think most of the time it's rewarding. I think the children, both young and old, older children, they keep you moving. They mm-hmm. keep you busy. They keep you on your toes. And I wouldn't trade it for anything mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, what we've done and the way everything has worked out, and we know it's God's calling and what we should be doing.
We did go on an island alone once.
Yes.
For our 30th wedding anniversary.
Right.
And our, I think it was my 50th birthday at the same time, and our adult kids stepped up so that we yep. could go by ourselves for 1 week, which we quickly realized was not nearly long enough. And
right.
we continue to just would love to one day go do that again. But it was wonderful that we were able to do that. But we enjoy our kids, I think, young and old.
Yeah.
All of our, you know, all of our kids, our oldest biological is 31 on down to our youngest at home still is 15. And
the grandkids
and the 5 grandkids that we have, and a lot of them show up on Friday night for pizza, and they get along, and we're blessed
yeah.
to have this amazing family legacy that God has called us into. So I know that we are grateful for that. So you've been an adoptive dad for over 20 years. What advice would you give to other adoptive dads? Maybe let's start with maybe dads whose wives are trying to needle them into adoption or foster care. So the reluctant dad, what would you say to the reluctant dad first?
I would say he should carefully and slowly seek God and what God wants him to do, and make sure that his heart is into it, and also make sure that him and his wife are on the same page, because you have to work as a team. Mm-hmm. There's no other way.
Yeah.
Both of you have to be committed to each other, to God, and, you know, headed towards the same goal of what, you know, whether you're adopting or fostering or whatever God has called you to do, that you want to make sure that you're in tune with God and your wife, and you're working as a team.
I love that. What about other foster and adoptive dads? They have kids from hard places in their home. It's hard. What would you say to them?
I would say it's definitely hard. It's rewarding. Continue to pray for continue to pray with your wife to work towards getting connected with the child, making it priority, getting guidance from you know, taking the time to look at DVDs, read books, information.
Get the training
that's needed. Don't try to do it on your own. It's too hard. You know, consult with people that can help, and especially your wife, and making sure that you're both on the same page and working together.
I love that. This we learned this as we went, right? This is just from lived experience. So as we wrap up, are there any other thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners?
just God, I believe that God calls each and every one of us to do something. It's different for each individual, whatever God has for that individual. But I think the most important thing is that we live our lives for God and for family, and do what God has, find out what God has called each and every one of us to do, and then move towards that goal, and just live life for God.
I love that. Words of wisdom from Wayne. Thank you, honey.
Okay.
So
thank you for having me.
It was my pleasure. And thank you for listening today. I'm so grateful that you spent your valuable time with us. If you'd like to read the details of our adoption story, how all five of our adopted children came home, head over to my website, sandraflack.com. You can order a signed copy there. You'll get a really cute little bookmark to go with it, and I'll sign it and put it in the mail myself. The title of the book is Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. The ebook and the physical book is now available on Amazon and wherever good books are sold. So if you purchase it on Amazon, after you read it, please leave me a review on Amazon. And wherever you grab a copy, let me know what you think. Feel free to reach out to me on my website at sandraflack.com. If you were inspired by today's show, please subscribe and leave a review there. When you do, it boosts up this podcast in the algorithm so more listeners can find us. And please share it on your social media with your fellow foster and adoptive parents so that they can be encouraged too. Every Monday when a new episode comes up, we promote it on social media. So when you see who the guest is and what the topic is, please share that so others will know. Check out my social media so you can find me. I'm on Facebook at Sandra Flack and at Sandra Flack Author, Instagram at @SandraFlack_JFO, and both Facebook and Instagram, we are at Justice for Orphans. And there you'll check out some of our great ministry work with Care Portal and this podcast and other stuff that we're doing. Thanks again for joining me for episode 277 of Orphans No More. I am thrilled to have you along for the journey.